It's Wednesday, March 16th. Thank you for being patient. Recording a little bit later in the day today. Adam Azer with Al Melk. You are on Heath Cummings. Who's excited for Breakouts? 2016 Breakouts. Make some noise!
I will not be making any noise. And to be clear, we're only thanking the people for their patience that normally listen to the podcast before, like, 3 p.m. The rest of you haven't been any more patient than normal.
I imagine many people have tweeted me, where's the podcast today? Adam, where's the podcast? Any podcast?
You don't really
today?
Have to imagine. Like, have many people tweeted you?
I haven't been checking.
Go to Twitter.com and find out so you don't have to guess.
What if have you I been doing all day?
What have I been recording the opening line podcast?
Okay, but like all day long you've been unavailable.
Yes, I've been very unavailable today. I've been busy so far. And I just recorded the opening line podcast, which included three guests. It was a long time, and then I had to make a sandwich after that so I could eat before this podcast, so I could get my fuel, so I could talk about Breakouts. Let me tell you something.
To be clear, yes. To be clear, it's 1 in the afternoon, and your incredibly busy day has included one podcast and making a sandwich.
No, there was a lot of research being done before the podcast. And here's the thing about the one podcast. It was spread out over about 2 hours of recording, you know, with gaps in between.
Sounds inefficient.
Well, you had to take breaks to make the sandwich.
It's not. Yes, I did. Let me tell you another thing here. Okay. I asked for chicken cold cuts at the supermarket, and they gave me turkey, and they labeled it chicken. And I am not happy because that is a huge downgrade.
Well, they probably were just making a statement on going to the store to get chicken cold cuts.
Well, what's wrong with that?
There's lots of different ways you can eat chicken. Cold cuts is not one of them.
Well, it's the easy way for me. So anyway, here's why I'm excited about this podcast. This is the podcast that's going to win people fantasy leagues. This and all the other ones, of course. But last year, two guys really stood out for me that I had on at least three of my six teams. I think I had six teams, and I had them on at least three. Not the same teams necessarily, but at least half. And those guys were Manny Machado and Chris Archer. And they were huge breakouts. They were huge successes, and they were a big part of the reason why I had a good year. So we'll get into it a little bit more. We have injuries to go through, like Lance McCullers, Edwin Encarnacion, Chin Ming Wong. I'm going to say his name.
No, you're not.
Yeah, I am. Just for
why?
Fun.
He just did.
Just for fun?
It's ridiculous. But it wasn't even fun.
We'll get into more breakouts later, but let's just start with a little open discussion right now. Who are the Machados and the Archers that you love this year that will be high picks or early round picks in 2017?
Well, the thing is, those were guys who, you know, I've got a lot of guys in my breakout list who aren't necessarily going to break out on that level. But I think of the ones who are kind of on the doorstep of that, I think George Springer.
Yes.
And glad you like that.
Yes.
And I think you're going to get a more muted response from Christian Yelich. But I think he's in the same – he's not in the same category in terms of he's going to land in the same place in the rankings. But in terms of somebody who's, you know, been around for a few years now and I think is destined to be at a higher level than what he's shown us so far.
Okay. So the category is that he will outperform his draft stock.
Well, that would make him a sleeper. Okay. There's so much confusion between sleepers and breakouts.
I'm just saying, like, you started to say that he's in the same category as George Springer, and I was trying to figure out what the things were that made them similar, and it sounds like the thing that makes them similar is that they're both on your breakouts list.
Well, but they've already broken out to a level where they're must-draft guys.
Mm-hmm.
And not everybody on my list is already at that level.
Oh, okay. So your list might be a little bit more breakout-y.
It's a breakouts list.
Well, I think right now, I mean, we could talk about – there's not every guy who's going to fit in this category, but I want to know now the super breakouts who are, you know, at the elite tier of their position next year. So Springer, Yelich would not fit that category, so he'd be a little bit deeper on the list.
Well,
but
well, how do you feel about Taijuan Walker? I bet you're excited.
No, I got this reputation as someone who doesn't like Taijuan Walker, and it's completely inaccurate. It's not that. I just don't think he had a good year last year. That was my only case. So I think there's a lot of work to do for Taijuan Walker. I understand the whip was really good, but the production other than that, the ERA wasn't. So, yeah, sure, I like him. I like that whole group of sophomore pitchers.
Well, when his whip comes down, you're going to want to start him up.
No, when his ERA comes down. The whip's already down.
Well, then that totally ruins the whole Rolling Stones theme I was going for there.
Oh, I missed that.
That's okay.
Heath, how about you? Any nominees for this the super breakout list?
The super breakout list, I've got well, you know what? I'm going to just go a different direction with this.
Okay.
Cuz it's somebody that I kind of feel like shouldn't be on a breakout list, but he's just being so underappreciated for how good he was last year. And so he's going to be a super breakout in that he might be amongst the top 10 at his position next year.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not being drafted in the top 20 right now.
Okay.
So does that qualify as a super breakout?
Just tell me who it is. Yes, it does. I'm on pins and needles.
It's Carlos Martinez.
Ah, yeah. Well, I know how I feel about that.
It was worth it, wasn't it? It was worth it.
Hey, you know,
I wrote...
Wait a second, Heath, one sec, because you kind of scoffed a little bit, I think, at how much stock I was putting into... I'm not even sure how much stock, but I was putting some stock into Tom Verducci's list of pitchers who he's afraid of because of innings jumps.
Yep.
And Martinez is one of them. Now, right. We all know, listening to this podcast, I love Carlos Martinez, and I am totally on board with it. However, Lance McCullers was also one, and he's going to start the year on the DL with shoulder injuries. So are you concerned in that regard with Carlos Martinez?
No. Do you remember why I scoffed at it?
Not really.
Because he cited examples of players that would have been on the list last year and how they got hurt this year. And like one of the players that he had like five or six examples of either guys got hurt or something else went wrong. And like one of them was an arm injury. They had a bunch of freak things that happened. It's a 1 year sample size. I agree there is some risk with players that have an increase in innings, but do you realize how good he was last year?
Absolutely. Carlos Martinez, yeah.
I don't think you do.
I've been making this argument for months.
Were you on the podcast last year?
What?
Adam was stoked.
He's my favorite player this year.
I'm just saying, as much as you love him,
yes,
I think I'm going to still give you a statistic that blows your mind.
Okay, blow my mind.
Okay, there are five pitchers in the last 5 years that have had more than a strikeout per inning and an ERA below 3.2 before their 24th birthday. Five pitchers in the last 5 years.
All right, Martinez is one. Who are the other four?
Obviously, one of them is Carlos Martinez. Right. The other four are Clayton Kershaw, Chris Sale, Steven Strasburg, and Jose Fernandez.
Wow. Yeah, I love it, man. He does have that very high whip.
Yeah,
but
he did.
I love it.
If I remember, there was a guy that was on that list, maybe more than one of them, that had some issues with whip earlier in their career.
Okay. Hey, I'm on board. You don't have to convince me.
Almost all of them.
Carlos Martinez all the way. Thank you for that. That's a good way to start the breakout discussion. Let me intro the show a little bit here.
Good.
We're going to talk about a number of things, including the injuries and the breakouts. Try to get to your emails at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. As you might imagine, tomorrow we'll do busts, and Friday we'll do kind of a grab bag. Time out. Let me pause. Not really pause, but pause my intro here, because I know Scott really wanted to be on this show. He was excited to talk about his breakouts, and he has said time and again that Rougned Odor is his favorite breakout this year. Is he a super breakout, as we're creating this new term, a guy that could be, you know, second round pick or something like that next year, Rougned Odor?
I think he could be, but I think he could do that if he just kind of, if he just takes what he did last year and prorates that over a full season. I will also say, I think I probably used average draft position a little bit more in my breakouts maybe than others did. I don't understand Odor's average draft position everywhere but on CBS.
Okay, well, so what is it?
When I look at it on CBS, he's got a fifth round average draft position at the very end. And I think he could be a bust at that. Like, because we talk about what if he just does what he did at the end of last year. Well, what if he does what he did at the beginning of last year? He's going to be a terrible bust.
Yeah, and I should, by the way, qualify what I said, because I said take what he did last year and
right.
Do that. I meant the good part.
Right.
Yeah, well, can we kind of excuse him for what he did at the beginning of the season? He got sent down. He worked things out, I guess. He came back, and he was a much better player.
The beginning of the year matters just as much as the end of the year.
No, I don't think it does in this case.
in any case.
No,
you've got a narrative that, as you said, he went out, he worked things out. There was progress. There was development. This year we'll see.
Right.
How,
what I was trying to get around to was when you look at Fantasy Pros, his average draft position on every other site that they monitor is eighth or ninth round.
Yeah, you're right. It's crazy.
So yeah, he's a great breakout candidate. I don't know that I see a situation where he really gives you huge value for the fifth round. Like, I feel fifth round is kind of building in him doing what he did last year. Not just the good part, but all of it together.
Okay. It's Rougned Odor. So email us at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com and fill out your brackets. Go to cbssports.com/brackets or make your picks on the CBS Sports app, which is, by the way, really awesome and you need to get it. But you can get the complete March Madness experience with our bracket games on the app, on the website. Again, cbssports.com/brackets. I think the URL I gave out yesterday doesn't work. And I think the only way to really join our March Madness tournament pool is by following me or Heath or Al, if you guys want to tweet it too. On Twitter, I'm at Adam Azer, A-I-Z-E-R, at Al Melk CBS, Al M-E-L-C CBS, and at Heath Cummings Sr., S-R, at Heath Cummings S-R. I've been tweeting out links to the Bracket Challenge with all of our podcast listeners. I want to get 500. We're very close to that as of Wednesday. So let's make it happen. I think it could be a lot of fun, and we'll see how we all do.
Have you seen my entry name?
No, what is it?
Livin.
Livin?
You don't even remember the best quotes from that movie. You're
so
awful.
What movie?
Don't worry about it.
What? Come on.
Everybody that's listening knows what movie.
Is that from Empire Records?
No.
Well, then I don't feel bad about not knowing it, because that's
Dazed and Confused.
Oh, forget that movie. Forget it. Wow. Well, here's our tweet of the day. It's from Mike Halbany, longtime listener, by the way. He says, whichever listener of the podcast scores the most points this weekend should win entry into the podcast league. What do you guys think about that?
Yep.
I like it too.
We're running out of spots, aren't we?
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't know. Can I do that? Can I reach out to that guy? I'll try to do that, but that's a really good idea. So if you want to be in the podcast league, you got to enter our bracket challenge and score the most points. Here's our email of the day.
Well, there's other ways. Like, that's not the only way that you get in.
No, but that's one ticket, one golden ticket. Email of the day is from Ted. He says, Adam, I would love the chance to beat Heath Cummings in the podcast league. Just thinking of the chance gets me fired up. You really should give him a lot harder of a time on the podcast. His thinking on Kendrys Morales being way better than David Ortiz is seriously flawed. So if chosen, I'm ready for the opportunity.
Two things. I think Ted's in is number one. Number two, I wish that we had the ability to like play the tape from what I said about David Ortiz and Kendrys Morales. Cause I'm almost positive what I said was I have a hard time getting excited about David Ortiz because I don't see much difference between him and Kendrys Morales.
You definitely did not say that Morales was better. That's pretty much what you said. What you just said now is what you said the first time, which was equally ridiculous.
Not even close to ridiculous. Like, saying Kendrys Morales is much better than David Ortiz is much different than saying they're kind of similar.
But see, one's a nine and one's a ten.
Exaggerate to make the point that was ridiculous.
And I did go and look because I thought maybe I was way off. And I think there was a 20-point difference in points like last year between the two of them.
Yeah, Kendrys Morales. And I know you, Heath, so I'll just be Heath for a second. Kendrys Morales, he hit like 340 or something with runners in scoring position. So if I were Heath, I'd be like, he's not going to hit 340 with runners in scoring position again. And he's not going to drive in 103 runs or whatever he drove in.
That's good. That's very
Thank
good.
You. Thank you very much. All right, on to the news and notes here.
But we agreed he's in.
I can't keep giving out spots like this. And then it's a 12-team league. We're just giving out spots to everybody. Heath emailed me like three times.
How many spots have you given out?
You keep emailing me. Put this person in. Put this person in.
But they're not in.
But you've not committed any of them.
Fine, Ted, you're in.
We've just got the brackets winner and Ted.
Ted is in. Now,
Ted is in.
Serious question here. What do we do about Chris Towers? Because I feel bad. Chris Towers is going to be on the podcast a lot. I feel like he should be in the league, but I don't want to take a spot away from the listeners.
I really think you should make it a 14-team league.
I don't want to do that, but
deep league.
Well, I'll throw this out there. What about a second podcast league that's 14 teams?
You're going to have Chris run the Rejects League?
No, I'll run it.
Is what you're saying?
The first half only league?
The first half only league? To where we use BABIP instead of average and FIP instead of ERA?
Well, you guys think about joining another league. I don't want to put that on your plate. You guys are in 15,000 leagues.
Okay.
So it's an option. All right, now the news and notes. Matt, I am just fired up today. I don't know if you could tell, but I got some weird energy kick. Maybe it's because we're not doing this at like 9:30 in the morning. So
I think it's because you slept until like 11:30 based on what you told me you've done today.
I think it's because you ate this ginormous turkey sandwich and now the tryptophan's making you sleepy and weird.
If only it was chicken.
Matt Wieters, no structural damage in his elbow. So are you concerned about this or do you keep him where you have him, Matt Wieters?
I baked Matt Wieters' injury concern into my Matt Wieters ranking because I assumed it was going to happen.
And that ranking is what? Do you have that in front of you?
No.
All right, I'm pulling it up as well. But is Matt Wieters is a top 12 catcher?
He was for me.
Yeah.
I don't know that he's going to be anymore.
I've still got him in the top 12, and I will.
I mean, I don't think we can say no structural damage means no risk here. But it's encouraging. It's not a terrible thing. Wieters is 11th for Al and 10th for Heath. So right around the Yasmani Grandal range behind Salvador Perez and Russell Martin. Michael Brantley took live batting practice, continues to make progress, and could be playing pretty early. So this is awesome.
I moved him up today.
Where to?
Right around 20th, I believe. In my overall outfield rankings, which is right around the Carlos Gonzalez, Carlos Gomez range for me, which kind of makes sense, really. You've got three guys with still, I believe, big upside, but definite injury concerns.
Well, if Brantley comes back, you know, do you consider him an injury risk or just he's going to get his DL stint out of the way pretty early? Al, what do you think?
I don't really think he's an injury risk. I think he's more of a performance risk. Just
Why?
Coming off shoulder surgery. Okay. Same concerns I have for Devin Travis.
Okay. And this is a guy who has batted 310 or better two straight years. Last year, 15 home runs and 15 steals. The year before that, he was 20-20. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong here, but Brantley more of a points, not that he's bad at Roto, but better in points leagues?
Definitely.
Okay. And, you know, in case I forget to bring it up, super breakout George Springer, who's going pretty early, but still could outperform his draft value. I do worry a little bit about him in points leagues because he strikes out so much, but I think the steals power combo will make him more of a Roto stud, George Springer. Do you guys agree there or disagree?
I totally agree there. I also think for him to be a breakout or for anybody to be a breakout, they don't necessarily have to outperform their ADP. They're just breaking out.
I do not agree with that statement. But there is no set rule for what a breakout is.
That is true.
So Al can believe what he believes, and I can believe what I believe, and
it's like RBI and RBIs,
except that it's RBI.
All right. So we talked about some pitchers a couple days ago, or I don't even remember which podcast it was on, but Lance McCullers on the DL with a sore shoulder does not mean he's going to be out a long time. We don't know, but at this point, like, would you take Jason Hammel, Kyle Hendricks, those two that we talked about earlier this week, or Lance McCullers?
I'm still taking McCullers over those two. I did move him down in my rankings below Pineda, below Stroman, below Yu Darvish.
Give me a number. Give me a number. Heath.
47.
47. Okay.
Yeah, I moved McCullers down to that same area. I think actually maybe a little bit lower even. And I also moved both Hamill and Kendrick up. And I am now talking slowly and trying to waste time so that I can look them up and see exactly where I have them.
Well, McCullers, you know, I hope that he falls to a point where I can fill out my rotation and then take him as a backup or maybe even as a fifth starter and then take a backup quickly because I just think we loved him, right? I mean, so much upside. He was really good last year. So a lot of potential there.
Yeah. I've got sure. Hendricks 45. At the top of the three, McCullers 48, Hamill 51.
All righty. Edwin Encarnacion will miss about a week with an oblique strain. Any take on this? Does this change anything, Edwin Encarnacion?
It does worry me a little bit, that combined with his age. He's, I believe, 33. And, you know, we never talk about age with Encarnacion.
Right.
He's a year older than Miggy.
Yeah, I am concerned. I don't think I was particularly high on E5 as it was. But he's not going to fall out of the top seven. And I'm not going to move him below Abreu yet.
Okay, so it doesn't seem like a big... You're not really doing
anything. I'm not doing anything yet, but I'm watching the situation.
I might move him below Miggy.
He misses some time every year. This is not a guy who's playing 155 games. He played 146 last year, which was his most since 2012. 128 the year before that, 142 the year before that. So I do, you know, you always talk about baking something in. I think you bake in some missed time from Edwin Encarnacion. You just hope it's 15, 20 games or something like that and nothing major. I don't think people should overreact to spring injuries, though. They happen. You know, I'm not saying you guys are, but it's not a...
Well, this particular type of spring injury, I mean, we don't like obliques.
No, we don't. We do not. Okay, Chin-Ming Wong throwing 95 miles per hour for Kansas City. We don't care. Now, Scott Kazmir's velocity a little bit low. Any concerns there, Scott Kazmir?
I have baked in injury risk
to
my Kazmir rankings.
There you go.
But this is not helping.
Okay, Andrew Bailey.
He said that he was just working on timing his delivery.
Maybe that's true.
Let's go to the bullpen here. Andrew Bailey may have moved ahead of David Hernandez to be Philadelphia's closer, according to PhillyVoice.com. What do you make of that?
I think that that's the whole thing sounds a little bit fishy to me. I don't think he's moved ahead of him at this point, from what I've read. I read a couple things, and I'm not saying that he couldn't possibly end up, but I think if David Hernandez and Andrew Bailey do the same thing for the rest of the spring, Hernandez will win the job.
Okay.
It's a contested situation now. And look, Hernandez was never the clear-cut closer. He was just always the front runner.
Right.
So
you think he's not the front runner now?
Yeah, I think it's cloudy. I think there's no clear front runner, and it's taking a murky situation and making it even more difficult to read.
Awesome.
And a couple of guys, you know, that are you know, risky to start with. The other closer situation I think that's gotten interesting and kind of a frustrating way is the Braves, because at the beginning of spring training, I was reading that it was Grilly's job to lose, essentially, and now Freddie Gonzalez is talking about going with multiple closers.
This, you know what? These two teams might combine for 100 wins.
Ugh, I think they will win more than that.
Draft better closers.
I think it'll be a little bit more than 100, but it might not be 120. I mean, 120 is more realistic.
Okay. I was being Heath about the whole situation.
Okay, so anyway, sorry. Moving on. I thought you were going to keep going. Texas interested in Derek Norris, catcher Derek Norris, according to the Dallas Morning News. We'll check on that. Eduardo Rodriguez might not be back until late April due to a knee injury. That's according to the Providence Journal. And I have been drafting Rodriguez a lot. I feel like he's going pretty late and offers a lot more upside than many of the players going around him. And honestly, considering I'm not drafting him to be a starter, even if he misses a month, I don't really care with Eduardo Rodriguez. You guys, how do you feel about him?
Yeah, pretty much the same. If I have to spend more than a late pick on him, I don't think it's worth it because there's upside, but there was also a lot of inconsistency last year. And if you're losing a month, I mean, that's for a top line guy, it's one thing. But for somebody like Rodriguez, who if I picked him up, I would be probably surprised if I didn't drop him at some point. That I just don't think it's worth the wait.
I heard Adam say Eduardo Rodriguez without any R's, and now I keep doing it. I think I have him too high in my rankings. Where do you have Rodriguez?
See how quickly I can do control F here.
Oh, you're really fast at control F.
Yeah, 95. So that kind of reflects my skepticism right there. I'm not going to drop him further,
right?
Because of this,
I don't want to be the high man on Eduardo, so I'll be dropping him as well. Because I didn't really believe it when he was doing well last year. I thought it was wonky.
Yeah, I think it's also an interesting situation in terms of who might fill in for him. And even when Rodriguez comes back, because I don't think it's going to be a situation where, let's say, if I don't know, Roy Salias or one of the other candidates, Brian Johnson's hurt, but the lefty Owens, that they're going to take the job away from him. But maybe it means Joe Kelly, you know, loses the job when he comes back if that replacement fifth starter does well.
Moving on. Ryan Braun's going to play today. Sean Tolleson returned to action, and Devin Mesoraco set to make his spring training debut tomorrow.
You missed one piece of news from yesterday.
All right, hit me with it.
The Rich Hill era is over.
What do you mean? What happened?
That's not news. That's speculation.
He has been so terribly awful this spring. He's pitched three games. I don't believe he's had an appearance yet. Where he's had more innings pitched than runs allowed. He's walked 12 batters in 7 1/3 innings. He has been awful again.
Oh, that's a shame.
It should not surprise anyone.
Well, I mean, I'm not terribly surprised. But, I mean, what he did last at the end of the year was impressive. So, sorry to see that for Richo. And honestly, I'm not giving the A's the benefit of the doubt anymore. You know, I'm sorry.
And Al's not ready to say it's over. It is speculation, but I think Al is ready to not draft him.
I didn't say that either.
Oh, you're not?
No, I think I'm one more bad start away from that.
So if we had a draft, we have a draft tomorrow, and yep. It's AL only, so you will draft him.
AL only, yeah, if he's available. And again, I'll take him where I have been taking him. And in AL only, I think it's going to matter more there, but in mixed leagues, I've been taking him very late. And right. He's been available very late, sometimes in the reserve rounds. In an AL only, I'm probably going to wait pretty late in that format even.
I think one of my bold predictions this year, Adam, is going to be that Sean Manaea outscores Rich Hill.
I don't even know who Sean Manaea is.
Exactly.
Let's talk breakouts.
He's a very good prospect for the A's.
Let's talk breakouts.
You're not giving the benefit of the doubt to.
So Heat's breakouts, he gave us, for the purpose of this podcast, I'll just read the names. Colton Wong, Delino DeShields, Carlos Martinez, Carlos Rodon, Gregory Polanco, Michael Franco. Ooh, I like that. You went Carlos, and then Anko.
Yeah.
Aaron Nola, and Ketel Marte. So where should we begin? We're not going to talk about all of them. I want to make people go to the column to read about everyone.
Okay.
Well, we already
talked about Carmart.
Yeah. Where would you like to begin, Heath?
I think we've talked plenty about Polanco.
No, I disagree. All I know is that you really like him. Let's talk more about why.
He is a guy. There's some similarities between him and Wong for me in that both of them showed an ability to hit for a decent average in the minors. Both of them showed better BABIP skills. And now everybody's BABIP is higher in the minors because the defense is bad in the minors. But both of them showed better, like we thought they'd have higher BABIPs than they've had their first couple years in the major leagues. Both of them, I think we expected a little more from than we got last year. I still think that both of them could be decent average hitters. And looking at their peripherals, I don't believe that they should have the low BABIPs that they've had. And Polanco at the top of that order, if he could hit 275 or 280, could be 100 runs, 40 steals guy.
In that lineup.
Hashtag.
And he was basically a top 30 outfielder last year.
Right.
So.
And I think I only have him right around 30th.
Yeah.
Now, one of the reasons he was top 30 is because, like you always say, at bats matter a lot. And he hits the top of the order.
Yeah, and I like it.
I think the same thing could happen to Wong. Like, for all of the ingenious of Cardinals management, I do believe they've hit him towards the bottom of the order because his batting average has been lower than they thought it would be. And he's been kind of unlucky to have a bad batting average. If he hits 270 or 280, he'll probably be at the top of the order, especially with Peralta out. They've got room up there.
And I think with Peralta out, maybe it lessens the platoon risk if Jerko plays more shortstop?
I sure hope Jurco plays a lot of shortstop because I don't want the platoon risk.
And, yeah, Wong. Well, let's go to Polanco. I'll look at where he's being drafted. He's 29th outfielder off the board in rotisserie leagues, according to Fantasy Pros. Would you rather have Gregory Polanco or Adam Eaton?
Polanco. I'd much rather have Eaton. I'm more trusting of the power from Eaton. I think the stolen base upside isn't quite as high. And I trust Eaton also to outdistance him in batting average by quite a bit. So I think the few extra steals don't really make it worthwhile for Polanco.
My biggest thing with Eaton is I believe we've seen the best we're going to see from Adam Eaton.
Well, that's interesting.
You don't?
Well, no, I was actually going to bring him up as a potential super breakout because of the
super breakout.
Well, the improvement he made from 2014 to 2015, where he went from one home run to 14 home runs, another guy who's going to hit at the top of the order. He hits a lot of triples, which is good for points leagues, 9 last year, 10 the year before. I don't know, not like a Springer power speed combo, but there's something there. Why do you think we've seen the best of him? I was going to ask, could he potentially take the next step? Because Adam Eaton, a guy who's being drafted around 30th at outfield, was actually a top 20 outfielder last year in 153 games.
Well, I initially had Eaton on my bust list because I was worried that people were going to draft him as a top 20 outfielder. They shouldn't do that. He overachieved in batting average. But, yeah, the increase in power, to me, means something.
I just don't know, and I haven't looked a lot at his batted ball data to see if the increase in power came with a corresponding increase in something that should indicate that power. Have you looked at that?
I have. I don't, you know, don't have the numbers handy, but he did hit fly balls for greater distances.
Okay.
So I think there was, you know, more than that to back it up, but you know, and plus he did it over, you know, roughly half the season. So it wasn't, you know, just a month or two.
Right. This is kind of funny. In 2014, his home run to fly ball rate, 1.3% of his fly balls turned into home runs. That seems low. We should have known he was going to hit more home runs this year.
Well, he only hit one. So I think we did know he was going to hit more than that.
Well, we didn't know that.
I mean, I think we had a feeling. And last year, you know, you're on what, Fangraphs?
Uh-huh.
A Baseball Reference had it at 0.7%, his home run to fly ball percentage in 2014. They have it in 2015 at 7.2%. It's not exactly an unsustainable number. Now, he hit a lot fewer ground balls. Ground ball to fly ball rate went from 1.55 ground balls per fly ball to 1.06. So he was hitting more fly balls, but still more ground balls than fly balls. What are the chances Adam Eaton is, you know, a top 15 must start awesome outfielder this year, takes another big step?
I think it's like 10%. Okay. I put him in the top 40.
Heath, Carlos Rodon, do you get?
Yeah, Rodon is somebody that's on this list. Like, there's different types of breakouts. There's guys that I really think are going to be better than they've ever been before. And there's guys that, if they do breakout, could just be so elite that you at least have to talk about them as breakouts. I think Rodon falls into the second camp for me. I'm not sure if I was ranking each of these guys on the most likely to breakout, he wouldn't be at the top of my list. But he is definitely towards the top on what could he give you for where he's being taken. He's another guy that there's just so few players that have done what he did at his age. Generally speaking, if you're able to be as successful as he was with more than 4 walks per 9, you turn into a very good pitcher.
Now, I think I saw an ESPN article about Rodon and a change that pitching coach Don Cooper made with him to, you know, improve his control,
mm-hmm.
which did show some signs of improvement. If you look at his last 3 starts, I think it's kind of interesting what happened with Rodon. 2 of those were 7 innings, 1 run, 1 walk. But then his last start, he walked 5 in 6 innings. So there were still some inconsistencies, but he got better there. He had a 1.44 whip. We know Carlos Rodon missed the strike zone a lot. So does that limit his upside? Does that matter to you? Like, what are you thinking there with the walks?
Well, it only limits his upside if you believe that a 22-year-old pitcher can't improve his control.
Right.
And I don't think anybody believes that.
Like, how much could he improve it to the point where he's totally awesome this year?
I think he could. I think he could improve it to where he's only walking three and a half batters per nine.
Wasn't he at 3.5 for the latter part of the season last year?
So there you go. He could probably even get below three.
Okay. Carlos Rodon, or
if he does that with that slider, I mean, his slider's about as unhittable for lefties as any pitch anybody has.
Rodon or Taijuan Walker?
Well, I prefer Walker.
Yeah.
So before the injury, did you have McCullers or Rodon ahead?
I had Rodon ahead of McCullers.
I had McCullers ahead.
Okay. How about now, Al?
The control does worry me for Rodon, and I don't want to discount what Heath was saying. I mean, obviously he's young, he's relatively inexperienced, he can improve, but he could also be Trevor Bauer and be somebody who teases you,
yeah,
you know, with short-term improvements, but always finds that resting point that doesn't really help you. Until I have a better sense of where Rodon is headed, I'm not going to prioritize him over guys like Walker who have shown sustained improvements in control.
So, two more pitchers, one for Heath, one for Al. They're going back-to-back on Fantasy Pros. Kevin Gausman, 66th, and Aaron Nola, 67th starting pitcher off the board. A little bit behind Joe Ross. Well, first of all, I don't know if either of you had Ross, but I feel like you both like Joe Ross quite a bit. Can we consider Joe Ross a breakout?
Sure, we can. Heath's list has a lot of second-year pitchers, or I think second-year players in general,
it does,
on it. And my breakout list typically have very few because I hate, you know, really making a call on second-year players. It's so hard. I feel like this needs research. Because my perception, which might be wrong, is that it's totally unpredictable how second-year players are going to do, even really highly touted ones.
I completely agree. I mean, we had that discussion with Carlos Correa, but no, there is plenty to support your theory, Al. So I think it's a matter of when you take them, how good you feel about your team, when you invest in these second-year guys, and a lot of these players that we're talking about are going late enough where I don't think you have to really be shy about pulling the trigger on a Carlos Rodon or a Taijuan Walker. You're getting fine value for them. Okay, anyway, Kevin Gausman, not a second-year player, and Aaron Nola, second-year player. Who do you guys prefer out of Gausman and Nola?
I'm fairly certain I have Nola higher.
And I do, but by four spots.
No, you're not
Nola,
as certain.
Nola. I mean, I know I have him higher.
You're less certain.
But I'm less certain that he's going to be better.
Right.
All right, we'll talk about these guys. What are you looking for this year from Nola and Gausman?
I guess I feel like Nola's floor is higher. This is a guy that was, what, the seventh overall pick in the 2014 draft. And he came up last year, and he wasn't overpowered by any means. There is plenty of room for growth there. Gausman, and the best part is the Phillies have no reason to do anything other than let him grow. Gausman's in a pretty different situation because he's on a team that I think probably believes they're competing this year. And I do think there's more risk that his job isn't as safe as Nola's.
I think that's all fair, and I think that's probably part of why I do give Nola a slight edge. With both pitchers, I mean, I'm not really sure, you know, where they're going. But with Gausman, Keith, you talked about there being two different kinds of breakouts.
Mm-hmm.
I see there being two different kinds too. There's consolidation players who have shown skills at different periods of time.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's players sort of like Chris Archer who didn't really show great improvement in any one area, but it's just they never really kind of stepped into what they look like they're going to be when they were prospects. And that's what I think Gausman is. I don't see a whole lot from his track record that really gets me excited.
Right.
But I do feel pretty confident he's going to provide strikeouts. I'm not confident he's going to be able to keep the ball in the park. But, you know, I just think maybe it's time for him, now that he's been around a few years, that he can take that step to be the pitcher we thought he was going to be when he first came up.
All right, let's talk about some more breakouts here. We'll go to Al's list. All right, fine. You know what, Al? I'm gonna call you out here.
Call me out.
Wow.
There are three pitchers on your list that really I don't think statistically have done anything to warrant being on a breakout list. They are Nathan Eovaldi, Rick Porcello, and honestly, a guy that I know you like a lot, Anthony DeSclafani. I don't get it, especially when it comes to strikeouts. And for Eovaldi and for Porcello, whip. These guys give up a ton of hits. So what is it about them? And I think I'll say these are kind of later round picks, so Al's not putting a ton in these guys. Maybe it's taking a flyer on them and hoping one sticks. Eovaldi, Porcello, DeSclafani, talk to me about these three guys.
Okay, well, you nailed it in terms of my approach to them. Yeah, I'm not convinced on the level that I am, you know, with Yelich or even Taijuan Walker in terms of their probability for a breakout. But I saw good things from each of the three of them in the second half, which is going to impress Heath greatly. Eovaldi, at the time, remember, we talked about it a lot because he almost went an entire month without giving up an extra base hit. And it wasn't entirely a fluky thing. I think anytime you do something that extreme, there's probably some luck involved. But he became much, much better all of a sudden at getting ground balls. And there was a start that he made against the Marlins. I think it was last June, where he got absolutely shellacked at Marlins Park, gave up 8 runs, didn't make it out of the first inning. And from that point on, he was a very different pitcher. So again, there's a narrative here that may ultimately prove to be right or wrong, that it wasn't going well for him. He made some pretty big changes, and we saw it in the results. So if Eovaldi can carry that over, I think he's going to be a better pitcher who's not going to give up a lot of extra base hits, and you're going to see improvements in the ERA and the whip.
For Eovaldi, I mean, I don't know. He throws so damn hard, and he worked on his splitter, and it became a pretty good pitcher, and it became a pretty good pitch for him. So I could see it. It just, you know, even when he was pitching, even when he had a really good stretch, he had a 12-start stretch, Eovaldi, from late June to late August with a 2.93 ERA. He only pitched more than 6 innings in 4 of those 12 starts, and he only struck out 57 in 73 and two-thirds. But I see it, Al, because the guy, when you throw 99 miles per hour, he's I think, the hardest throwing starting pitcher in baseball, if not the hardest, certainly one of them.
Yeah, no, he is.
Yeah, so I see it there, which is also why, like, I still will have a little bit of a thing for Joe Kelly.
Yeah, but this is not a thing where it's like, oh, Eovaldi throws so hard, and I just know one of these days he's going to strike people out. No, I've given up on that.
Yeah.
But just looking at the results during that stretch you talked about, and that was the whole rest of the season. I don't think he pitched in September.
He had a few more starts after that. They didn't go well, and then he went.
Here's my question.
Show. Well, but I think he was hurt.
Yeah, he was.
Here's my question. What does a Nate Eovaldi breakout look like?
It looks like probably a pretty average strikeout rate, like 7/9.
Okay.
I would say an ERA right around 3, maybe even under 3.
What?
Yeah.
An ERA under 3.
Well, Adam, what his ERA during that stretch was, what,
293.
Yeah.
Over what stretch?
12 starts.
12 starts when he started getting ground balls at a much higher rate.
Okay.
Now, this is what I would say about Eovaldi. Since you know you might, because he gives up so many ground balls, some of them are going to leak through for hits. And because he does, you know, he doesn't strike out a ton of batters, even in Al's best case scenario. This is the kind of guy I like more in points leagues, where you get a quality start from him, you get a lot of wins from him if the Yankees are good, and they have that lockdown bullpen to help him out. So the point total, because you get the quality start points and the win points, could really help him in a points league, whereas the whip is not going to be great, and the strikeouts aren't going to be great. So to me, Roto, I wouldn't be as excited. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, let's do some more breakouts here.
Okay, so well, Porcello and DeSclafani, I know we talked about Eovaldi.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
But, you know, Porcello did become a strikeout pitcher after coming back off of a DL stint last year. Not a long stretch. I think it was 8 starts. But this is somebody who already has gotten ground balls, shown really good control. I think he can be a very good whip pitcher and maybe can get the strikeouts on a sustained basis. And DeSclafani as well. Very good control pitcher who started to strike guys out at a better rate late last season. Always really liked him because of the great control. So if there's another element to go with that, I think that he becomes a guy that at worst is a streaming option in 12-team mixed leagues.
I do have a question. It's not facetious. I am being genuine with this question. Who had the worst second half amongst your breakouts?
In terms of what, ERA?
I'm just trying to see, because so far everyone
We've talked about how good they were in
Robbie
second
Ray
half.
Did not have
Robbie Ray,
a
okay.
very good second half.
Okay. So it's not a prerequisite to have a good second half to be on the breakout list.
That is correct.
Okay.
No, Al's not that.
I know Al's not.
I've got more guys like that this year, though, I will admit.
Okay.
I think I'm very much in line with where you're at, Heath. But yeah, this year, for whatever reason, there's a lot of guys who did things in the second half that did really intrigue me.
Right.
Because it fit some other part of the narrative about them.
Right.
Right. Well, how about Addison Russell? He's one of your breakouts, and this one's interesting, you know, a highly touted prospect. And I like to consider pedigree and say, well, even if it, and I think that's kind of where you're at with Colton Wong, Heath.
Yeah.
I don't want to speak for you, but pedigree's important here. Addison Russell, Al, he's a breakout that you listed, and he's a mid-round pick. What kind of a season could you see Addison Russell having?
One, potentially with a lot of power. That's, you know, one of the intriguing skills that he has. Or at least he showed the minor leagues and showed for a time for probably about a quarter of the season. Again, it was later last year, not like the whole second half, but a good chunk of it. And he's got to get the strikeouts under control. But again, based on his work as a minor leaguer, I think that he's capable of that. So I think you could be looking, you know, potentially I'd say best case scenario, maybe a 270 average with 20 plus home runs.
Cool. That's a pretty good year for his second year.
Oh, that would be outstanding. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, I think that's the best case scenario, but wouldn't shock me.
I like this is optimistic, Al. And when we got Nate Eovaldi with a sub-3 ERA and Addison Russell hitting 20 home runs,
I think I'm starting to craft those bold predictions.
Best case scenario, Al, I think is more accurate.
I like it. I wish I would have taken a page. I'd done this myself on mine.
Well, let's do one more here. We'll go to one of Heath's.
Oh, we're going back to mine.
Yeah, how about... No, let's do Al.
Okay.
Jake Lamb. Because Jake Lamb got off to an amazing start last year, and then he had a foot injury, and then he was crap the rest of the way. Diamondbacks third base.
Yeah, I like this, Al.
Probably going to platoon against lefty or sit against lefties because he can't hit them. But Jake Lamb, go.
Well, you really set the stage there. It was very good at the beginning. Probably... I would say not probably. I'm sure he overperformed early on, but when he came back, so much worse than what I expected from Lamb. And the power that he showed in the minor leagues, I mean, sort of a Gausman type of case where now getting Lamb hasn't been around as long, but I think after last season, having that experience and dealing with the injury and probably dealing with some adjustments to facing major league pitching, that he can come back and we'll see more of that power that we saw from Lamb as a prospect.
My problem with Jake Lamb is that he hit 263 with a 344 BABIP.
That's all part of the overperformance early on that padded that.
Yeah, well, like if he has a similar year next year as far as strikeouts go,
mm-hmm.
and he doesn't profile as the type of guy that would have a high BABIP, I don't feel like.
No, but I'm counting on more home run power.
So if he has
hits not in play,
310 BABIP, you're looking at a 230 hitter.
Oh, no.
Well, it's 340 and 260.
I don't think that adds up, especially when you, again, factor in
more home runs.
Some more home runs.
I'm going to give you some names on the breakout-o-meter. You're going to tell me...
Breakout-o-meter.
0 to 10. Breakout-o-meter. Breakout-o-meter. It's got to be breakout-o-meter.
Okay.
All right. Randall Grichuk, 0 to 10.
I will go 6 with him because we get the benefit of hopefully seeing him for a full season, but I think there's huge injury risk.
Randall Grichuk was going to be in my breakouts column until I realized I had 4 Cardinals, and that seemed kind of ridiculous. So I will go 8.
Stephen Piscotty.
He was the 4th Cardinal. Stephen Piscotty. I will go. I like Piscotty more than Grichuk in points leagues. I'm going to go 7.
I'm going to go 4 on Piscotty because he's definitely poster child of second year player. I don't know what to make of because he had more power last year than I thought he would have, and I think he could regress.
Michael Conforto.
I'm going to go 4 on Conforto just because I'm a little bit more worried with playing time for him than I am with Grichuk and Piscotty.
I'm not worried about playing time. I just think what we saw last year is pretty much what I expect this year. So I'll go 3.
So rank Grichuk, Piscotty, Conforto. Not in terms of breakout o meter, just in terms of when you draft them. Grichuk, Piscotty, Conforto.
Huh. I have them ranked all basically right together. You want to rank them in points or in roto?
Well, I know you like Piscotty better in points than Grichuk, so you might as well just give roto.
In roto, I've got them all right around the 30th to 35th outfielder. I've got them Grichuk, Piscotty, or Conforto, Grichuk, Piscotty.
I've got Conforto, Piscotty, Grichuk, but they're 38, 41, and 42, so toss a three-sided coin.
How about Starlin Castro, 0 to 10?
I'm not excited. 2.
Again, could go either way with them. Absolutely. I'll go 6.
Okay. And Eddie Rosario, kind of a wild card. I was looking just yesterday. I was like, I'm just going to see who scored a lot of points. And I went scrolling. I wouldn't say he scored a lot of points, but he was higher than I thought. Eddie Rosario had 13 home runs and 11 steals last year in 122 games.
Yeah, I mean, he just might be one of those guys who's just a lot better than I thought he was going to be. But, I'm not expecting a breakout. So I'll go 3 on Rosario.
Heath?
Yeah, 2.
Do you guys ever draft Eddie Rosario?
I have not.
I have yet to.
Yet.
Real quick thought before emails. Did an NL-only mock draft with you guys yesterday. Closers are horrible in NL-only leagues. Make them a priority. There aren't enough to go around, and then you have to deal with those crappy teams with closers that aren't going to get a lot of saves, and we don't even know who they're going to be in some cases. So if you're doing an NL-only, keep it in mind. All right, so here's the deal. Because I woke up at 11 o'clock and made a turkey sandwich for an hour, I didn't really have time to put emails in the notes, so I'm going to find them in my inbox now, and we're going to read them together. Okay?
All right.
Oh, here's one from Kevin. Who are some middle relief setup guys who could potentially become closers this year?
I've tossed out the name Sean Kelly on some previous podcasts. I'm just trying to think of situations not like Atlanta, not like Milwaukee.
Keone Kella.
Yep. That's a tough one, though, because it could be him. It could be Wilhelmsen. It could be Sam Dyson. I don't know who's the setup guy in Texas that would be the natural successor.
It's a good bullpen they've got there.
Yeah. Joaquin Benoit, who makes this list every single year in Seattle.
Kevin Quackenbush, right?
Sure.
In San Diego.
Got to find the Rodney successor.
Okay, anyone else? Oh, by the way, do we know any more about the Astros bullpen and who's going to win that job?
Not yet. I read something, I would say 2 or 3 days ago, where Hinch was, in fact, didn't read it. It was a video interview with him and still talking about that situation as if he was undecided.
We got Marcel Martinez from Van Houten, New Mexico. He asks us, how do you evaluate the incoming Pacific Rim players such as Byung-ho Park, Hyun-Soo Kim, and Kenta Maeda? They play in different environments, different balls, skill levels so different. I typically avoid drafting them until they have a year or two under their belt in Major League Baseball. So, you know, it's Park, Kim, and Maeda. How do you evaluate these guys?
Yeah, not with a lot of, stock, I guess, in their stats, because it is so hard to know how they're going to adjust to Major League ball. So it really depends on context, you know, how far they fall in the draft. I think Park's a good example of this where because he plays first base and there's that, you know, sort of no man's land after Pujols comes off the board, that I am willing to draft Park at that point in the draft, probably be mid to early to mid teens rather, in a 12-team mixed league, you know, just because, why not? I'm not really liking any of the options that are available.
Here's an email from Chris in Denver, Colorado. Two guys in my league want to trade draft picks, picks 2 and 5 out of 12 teams. I feel like the guy trading up to the second pick should have to give up a mid-round pick to the guy moving down to the fifth pick. Is this fair and or necessary if I allow the trade?
Wait, so they just want to trade 2 and 5 throughout the draft or just in the first round only?
Well, that... Okay, obviously, if they are trading only in the first round, there needs to be another pick involved. So I'm going to assume they're just trading draft slots, and one guy's picking has the second pick like throughout and the fifth pick throughout.
That's what I assumed. Yeah. And if that is the case, I don't think there needs to be any other considerations there.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let it happen, Chris. Don't be that commish.
Yeah, I've been in leagues with that commish before.
Oh, don't even go there.
That guy's the worst.
All right, here's Steve Wallace in San Luis Obispo, in California. San Luis Obispo? I don't know. Two, the Bronx Hurricane, the pitcher lover, the data analyst, and the ageist. Well, I'm the Bronx Hurricane. Scott is the pitcher lover, and we know the other two.
Yeah.
I am an avid waiver hawk. I love finding value on the waiver wire. It's a standard 10-team league. Who are some players that I could draft with my final few roster spots, and we will be able to tell within the first month if they're startable or not? If they suck, drop them. If they don't, I got a nice late-round flyer.
I think we could probably grab a lot of players off of these breakout lists, the lower-end ones.
Yeah.
You know, the Desclafanis of the world. Although 10-team league, I don't know that I would necessarily go that low.
So 10-team league in a points league, we're talking about what, the 230th?
Yeah, sure. Somewhere
players right in the 200s?
I guess, well, in a roto league, I think Gerardo Parra's a must draft, but I think in a points league, that'd be a good approach to take with Parra. Although I think he's going to be overrated because of going to Coors.
Yeah, I don't know if he's going to be overrated because I really like him, but I do think he's going to be, I don't think he's going to be overlooked. Some guys that I think, like, maybe a Byron Buxton.
Yeah.
It might be a good one in that range. A guy that I'm high on that I had in my breakouts, but I didn't talk about in this is Manny Tomas. Maybe
10-team league. I just wouldn't. But yeah. It's hard. In 12-team league, I'd say, yeah, there's a, you know,
right,
big group of guys that I know I'm taking really late in 12-team leagues. But to me, somebody like Tomas, I just think I don't see the ceiling being high enough for me to use a pick on him.
This is my problem with the Tomas thing. I mean, he's a 25-year-old that's got like 400 plate appearances in the majors. How have we already decided what his ceiling is? Like, we didn't think his ceiling was low 400 plate appearances ago.
No, I didn't. You're right.
So I don't know why his ceiling fell so much. I mean, he wasn't good last year. I'm not trying to defend what he did last year, but he's still a young guy that we thought was really good coming into last year that had some struggles.
Well, you're right. It could be, you know, dead wrong on this. Rusnik Castillo, I would put in the same.
Steven Souza.
Same. Now, Souza, I don't know. I like it better. I would go late in a 10-teamer for Souza.
Okay.
Well, let's do one more. Let's grade a trade. This is from Jin. He says, hello, nerds. I've got an offer from my friend.
That's for us.
Yeah. I give up Scherzer and Chris Davis of Baltimore, Scherzer and Chris Davis, for Kershaw and Kemp in a 10-team head-to-head points league with an extra infield spot. Scherzer and Chris Davis for Kershaw and Kemp.
He's getting Kershaw.
Getting Kershaw and Kemp, yeah.
As much as I've talked about liking Matt Kemp, I don't like him enough to make up that difference. I'd rather have the Scherzer side, Scherzer and Davis.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say. Not about liking Matt Kemp, because I don't. But as much as I've talked about liking the part of the deal where you get the best player, Kershaw's the best player.
But I don't think he's that.
No.
Better than Scherzer to the degree that Davis is going to be better than
Matt
Kemp.
I feel like you're trading a borderline first-round pick for 2 second-round picks.
So what?
It's like Scherzer and Davis are the 2 seconds.
I get it.
Right.
And Kemp's a fourth or fifth?
I don't think Chris Davis in a points league is a second-round pick because of all the strikeouts.
Okay.
Kershaw last year was just under 100 points better than Max Scherzer, and Scherzer in some ways had almost a down year. Nah, I mean, not really. But he could be better.
What was the points difference between Davis and Kemp last year?
Yeah, that's what I was going to look up. It was, all right, so I said, so it's about 96 between Kershaw and Scherzer. Chris Davis scored 528 points, and Matt Kemp scored 436 points. So it's kind of negligible at the end of the day.
Pretty much identical.
Yeah, it's just a matter of what you think is going to happen this year.
Okay. Isn't it always?
Let's grade it then. What are we grading? Did you guys give a letter?
I'm going to go with a C minus.
That's my grade as well. C-. Like, I don't hate it. No, neither. But making me pick a side, I'm taking the Scherzer side.
Fun show, guys. I appreciate it. And I'm going to go take a nap. I mean, I'm exhausted after this. I've been working hard
Turkey,
all day.
Turkey, I'm telling you.
I've heard it's been a rough day there. I won't bother you by trying to get a hold of you and talk about any plans for the rest of the day.
Busts tomorrow on the Thursday podcast. I'm Adam Azer for Al Melchior and Heath Cummings. See you later.